This week on the Friday edition, we hear an interview with Danielle Frank, a Hoopa Valley tribal member, activist, and youth coordinator with Save California Salmon. It was first heard on November 15th, 2022 on the West Coast Water Justice podcast. This is part two of the interview.
So getting back to the interview, Danielle, I'm wondering, what are your hopes for the future of youth activism? And what changes would you like to see?
Some of the main changes I would like to see with youth being so involved in the movement is for us to be actually given a seat at the table during the big conversations and not just to be an afterthought. It's definitely not easy, especially as a teenager. There's not a lot of people in the climate justice or environmental justice world or almost any movement that want to take us super seriously. Yes, they want to have us on their media posts and they want to have us with the posters in front, but when it comes time to creating change and having conversations, it's very rare that a youth gets invited to that table. We should be getting the respect to be involved in these conversations, and the space could be made for youth opinions and big conversations, no matter what it is. When there's something regarding youth that needs to be fixed, nobody knows about the problems that youth face today better than us. So we should be involved in making those changes. And we have pretty good solutions considering that they are the problems that plague our lives, yet we don't get to be part of those conversations. People come to us after those conversations are had, after the solutions have been discussed, and ask us what we think about what they came up with. But there's not a lot of time where they come to us and ask what we think about this. Everybody wants to be the person to fix the next generation, but nobody actually wants to listen to us. And so I think that can change. If we were to open the doors to our activists who are 16, 17, 18, 19, we can have leaders with 10 years plus experience at between 25 and 30 years old. We can be graduating with our master's and already have 10 years of experience in our field. That's something that should be available. Thankfully, Save California Salmon and Margot Robbins and Hoopa Valley High School and Hoopa Tribe have given me that opportunity to be involved. And so that's something that I thankfully will have. I will be 25 with 10 years of experience. Before I get my PhD, I will be considered an expert in my field.
Hearing you talk, I'm wondering, what would be your advice to folks who are environmentally minded, have aligned values with you, but don't have ancestry that's native to what's now known as the United States? How could folks be better allies and help this manifestation come into the world?
So I think the main thing that can help someone who doesn't have like native ancestry to the United States could definitely be educating yourself. It might be hard if you are in the public education system, but there are definitely resources available today. Save California Salmon, Red Bud Resource Group. There are many things that are available, thankfully, to the internet. And it's really upsetting that they're going to have to contradict what they learn in public education system in order to get that proper education. But I think that's definitely the first step in being an ally. It's understanding who you're trying to help. And so getting that education regarding Native Americans and regarding the true history of America and regarding what actually happened to our people and Native tragedies and Native traumas were not lifetimes ago. They happen in this lifetime. And so being able to hold that space. And then if you do have the opportunity to reach out to a local Native community, a Native nonprofit, or a tribe, a rancheria, just starting that conversation of how you can help. It can definitely differ from region to region on what every tribe needs or what kind of assistance can be provided, but it's always there. And I think that the first step is making sure that you're coming at it with an educated point of view. And then on a further note, taking that education that you have and spreading that and helping other people understand what you have learned and helping your school understand why it was super upsetting that you had to go somewhere else to get a proper education, and helping them understand how it's instrumental to get these curriculums involved into the public education system so this ignorance of Native history can stop. It's not everybody's fault in the United States that not everybody knows about us. Misconceptions about Native Americans are not always the public's fault. The system that they're put into and forced to spend many hours of their life in is built upon the erasure of us. So helping us spread the word in our healing process, in us becoming an actual part of America, in America finding a way to make space for Native people rather than just taking everything from us time after time again. And that looks like talking to someone who makes those decisions at the school and explaining to them why you too, as a non-Native person, want to get this knowledge.
If an educator's listening, how would they get access to this curriculum or where would they find these resources?
Yeah, so I think if it's your first time hearing about the curriculum or even these problems in the education system, because not everybody talks about them, a good starting place would be the Save California Salmon Team. We have worked with a ton of school districts. And so as an educator, we have teachers trainings that are available every 3-4 months. It kind of differs on the time in between, but those teachers trainings are available to educators who want to implement our curriculum into their classrooms. And if they were hoping to do it on their own, they sign up for the teacher's education training, they get the curriculum, they learn about how we would teach it as Native people and what it's meant to be. If they want to do it on a bigger scale and they were to contact Save California Salmon and our education director, Charlie Reed, or myself, we could point them in the right direction in getting in touch with their school board and help show them the process of what it looks like to get that implemented. That's something that we've done before. If someone were to just send us an email with the Save California Salmon Team, we could definitely point them in the right direction as of when the next teacher's training is, when the TEK curriculum will be out. If there's some youth who really want to get involved, we have opportunities for that.
Okay, thanks for spelling that out. So building on all your work with the public schools and curriculum and expanding that throughout the state, I'm thinking about your work with Assembly Bill AB 2022. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, so AB 2022 was an assembly bill co-authored by Assemblymember James Ramos and Assemblymember Christina Garcia.
Just a warning for listeners that this next part of the interview contains sensitive content. We discuss missing or murdered Indigenous persons and sexual assault. Please take good care of yourself, and if you need to step away, you can always come back and listen when you're ready.
The objective of AB 2022 is to remove the S word from public location spaces. And so if you don't know what the S word is, feel free to look it up. I don't want to say that word in this space, but it is a derogatory term to dehumanize Native women. And it started when this place was a really bad place for Native American women and girls. It was dangerous, and we were seen as almost not people, minors and non-Native people who came to colonize America did not see Native women as respectable, so they would call them the S word. And that has a long history of glorifying violence and abuse against Native women. And so for so many places in California to be named after that word, meaning to dehumanize a Native woman, using that word in sacred spaces such as waterways, as ancestral lands, as ski resorts, as valleys, it's not okay. The history of that word is glorifying genocide and glorifying murder and glorifying sexual assault and domestic violence. And so AB 2022 was co-authored with the hopes that we could remove the S word from California location names as a whole. And so it actually did go through. It was signed. And by 2024, that word will no longer be in use in the state of California. It definitely sends a message that Native women are to be respected. Native women are not to be seen as what a white man seen us as 200 years ago. And we deserve that. And so these words that took our people, our women, and these things that started our intergenerational trauma cycle, these words are not okay to use. And so some people might not think it's a very big deal, but to us, it is a big deal. To us, every time that word is said, it's a reminder of what happened. It's a reminder that in our great-great-grandma's lifetimes, they dealt with the worst that you could deal with in this world, that they were not seen as human, they were not respected, and they were given a term so that men could treat them however they wanted because they were an S-word, they were not a woman. And so we don't deserve to go to a ski resort and be reminded of our traumas. We don't deserve to go to a creek that means everything to our people and be reminded that we haven't always been people. It affects the way that we feel about ourselves. It affects the way that we are able to remember our ancestors. It affects the way that people look at us. If people do know the meaning of that word and they know that it's okay to be used in over 100 places in the state of California, what does that say? There's a word that was coined specifically to perpetrate violence against Native women, and it's being used still today. And so that definitely feeds into the MMIW crisis, the Murdered Missing Indigenous Women crisis. We are still the most preyed upon people in America. It is more likely that a Native woman goes missing or gets murdered than any other person or any other ethnicity, any other anything. Even though we make up the smallest percentage of the population, it's most likely that we go missing and we get murdered. And for my tribe, the Hoopa tribe, we make up 22% of murdered missing Indigenous people in the state of California. Our reservation is 12 by 12 square miles. From that 12 by 12 square miles, 22% of the most people who go missing in the state of California is us. And so this is a problem that has directly affected my life. This is something that I grew up seeing. It wasn't uncommon that someone didn't have a mom because she went missing and never came home. It wasn't uncommon that everyone that you knew had been sexually assaulted because that's our reality. It wasn't uncommon that someone didn't have an older sister because they were murdered. That's something that we grow up with. I was actually in a room recently at the MMIP Tribal Policy Summit that the Yurok tribe was hosting, where someone asked, if you're a Native person who has lost someone who has been murdered or missing, please stand up. Almost every person in the room stood up. That's not how everybody grows up. And this word, this S word, it encourages that. It encourages us to keep growing up with Native kids who watch people go missing and get murdered, and they don't think it's uncommon because for us it's not. So I definitely encourage people to learn the meaning behind the words that you're using. And if they are derogatory terms that are meant to dehumanize people, stop using them.
Thanks for going into that and spreading awareness. I also want to ask you about the Vogue climate activist article that I saw you in, and what motivated you to get involved, and how is it related to water?
The Vogue article was something very unique to my career so far. I definitely haven't ventured too far into the media aspect of the movement until now. And the goal of the Vogue project was to help shed some light and illuminate the issues that are happening in BIPOC communities across the United States specifically, but me in California for my people. I was a little wary about the project. I definitely have never been super comfortable in front of cameras or done anything with a $5,000 dress. Mainly what made me say yes is the fact that getting the story of my people and the fights that we fight into a space like Vogue could bring thousands more people into the fight. Being involved in what we do, writing comments when we ask, making calls when we ask, even just educating themselves a little bit about Native Americans, spreading that education. And I think that projects like that can really make a difference. I think the more people who are empathetic about the issues Native communities face, and the more people who actually know about them, the more people like that we have, the better it is for us. And so I said yes, because the issues that my people face deserve to have a light shed on them. And so during the project, the entire team I worked with was absolutely amazing. The collaboration was really there. I was never once that I felt like they were trying to tell a story and I was on the front page. It was more that they were trying to help me tell my story in a way that could be visually compelling as well. So that was really special. It definitely brought a lot more awareness to what we're doing up in Northern California. The huge media projects like that are important to the fight because the more people that we get involved, the less ignorant people, Native people have to deal with living in this world. That was my goal with the Vogue project, to help show that Native communities are still here, still fighting for our rights and our water, and that we won't ever stop and, you know, make space for us because of that. The article really did do that for me, because specifically a lot of the issues that I was referring to in the article are water issues that my community faces. We spoke of the diversions. We spoke of the massive fish kills. We spoke of the cultural significance of salmon and the river to our communities. We were able to showcase the confluence where the Trinity and Klamath meet near the border of the Yurok Indian Reservation, and showing how the health of one river directly affects the other and how that can correlate to people too. And we actually worked on a documentary at the same time. We are still working on that final edit. It's about 10 minutes and it really showcases, while there are so many issues and traumas in Native communities, there's also like a beauty and a happiness and a humor that you won't ever find anywhere else. And so there definitely is a beauty in the midst of the madness, is something that we were trying to capture, and we did.
Can you tell us more about your attire and the images we see in the article and the incorporation of your traditional regalia in addition to the designer pieces?
That was another thing that was really special about the project and the article for me, was that while they were bringing these vintage dresses and all of these really expensive pieces, we were incorporating my regalia. We were incorporating my great-great-grandma's cap and my necklaces that my grandma and my auntie and I and Margot had made. And that meant a lot to me, my earrings. The cap that I was wearing was made by my 3x great-grandma, and it has been worn by some of the most influential women in my family. When you put it on, it tells a story of strength, and it tells a story of culture and community. And weaving a cap like that takes so long. It tells a story of dedication and of gathering and community. And so that cap means a lot to me. It has designs on it that represent the familial and friendship ties that you make in this world, and the way that it's continuous and always connected. It is made entirely of willows and hazel sticks and roots and woodpecker scalps and black fern and just really important things to our people that do need cultural fire in order to come back to us, replenish. They do need water in order for them to grow straight. They need our traditional and ecological practices in order to rejuvenate in the way that we need them. So that cap itself tells an entire story. And every time I wear it, I feel that community. I feel that strength of the matriarchs who came before me. I feel like one of those influential women who are going to stand up and tell that story of what we need and why we need it. And then for the necklaces, I specifically chose the ones I did because they were made by me and my grandma and my great grandma and my great-great-grandma and Margot Robbins, my mentor, and just so many generations of strong Native influential women who had a story to tell, and they told that through those necklaces. And now I wear them to tell that story alongside the necklaces that I've made. And then with the earrings, all my earrings were made by family members who today, in the all the midst of the madness of the modern day world, they find time to create beauty out of the materials that were given to us. These materials, they're not something that we own. There's not the same idea of Western ownership as I sign a deed and this land is mine. It's more of an idea of I am of this land and this land is of me. And the way that we feel about our home is like a family member. The way that I've watched the river and environment around me die, the way that I've grown up, feels like I'm slowly losing a piece of my family and a piece of who I am. And so when all of that is gone, who are we going to be? And so the environmental justice fight isn't just clean drinking water and clean water. It's a complete cultural identity. Our environment is who we are. And so we fight for not only a clean waterway because that's the right thing to do, we fight to be who we are because without those things, we will not.
Thank you for sharing that. So going back to the documentary you were talking about, is that also the Tikala Project? Where can folks find more about that?
Yeah, so it is part of the Tikala Project. The Vogue article near the bottom had a teaser of the documentary. The rest of the documentary, I believe, is going to be in some film festivals. The documentary is called Abalonize, which in Hoopa is Hosahona, which is actually my Hoopa name. So it's really special for that to be the title.
In closing, I'm wondering what's next for you and where people can go to learn more about you and your work.
Yeah, so what's next for me? I will be focusing on school and continuing college. I will be continuing to be the youth coordinator for Save California Salmon. I will also be going to the United Nations Climate Conference come November, where November 15th, I will be helping give a formal presentation about the dangers of hydroelectric dams to the United Nations. And I will be just trying to hold as much space for Native youth in the environmental justice movement, in the world, in everyday life, and continuing my efforts to make this world more inclusive for Native people. Definitely, you can catch up with me and my work through Save California Salmon social medias. Through my social media, I share a lot of my work on there. And, you know, my contact information will be found through Save California Salmon. I'm always around to help others further their knowledge too and find out how to get more involved.
We're so appreciative of you giving us this interview. Thank you. I just want to ask if there's anything else you'd like to share that's present for you in the moment.
My closing message could just be straight to the Native youth. You do matter and you are here for a reason and you totally belong in every space that you want to be in. And if you need any help feeling like that, reach out to me. I'm on a personal level. I'm always available for especially res kids who need a little bit of help. I was one of those kids and I found some really amazing mentors that helped me get involved in this work and helped me find a place in this world. And I am always open to helping other Native youth find that person or even grow into being that person myself. And so just a reminder to Native youth that you matter. You deserve to be here. You deserve to be in every space that you're in. And if you need any help getting to where you want to be next, I'm here. There are other people here. Continue to be strong. Remember that although there is traumas in life that we are born with, there's also strength and resilience that comes alongside that. And just hold that close to your heart. And to everybody else who's listening, who's not a Native youth, I thank you for hearing my perspective.
The original podcast was produced by Natalie Kilmer with production support from Carrie Tully, Cassiel Willey, Kendall Krakow, and Regina Chickazola. It was first heard on November 15th, 2022 in the West Coast Water Justice Podcast as Native Youth Rising. The Friday edition is a public affairs presentation of KIDE Hoopa Tribal Radio. We thank you for listening.